Good afternoon, and welcome back to Shaping Our Hearts class. This is lesson 11, and today we'll be talking about Ecclesiastes chapter 4 through chapter 8. And if you will, go ahead and open your Bibles to Ecclesiastes chapter 4. Our first reading will be there in just a moment, starting with verse 1. I hope you enjoyed last week's class, and our plan is to cover chapters 4 through 8 today. And then next week, we'll discuss chapters 9 through 12. And then I'll hand it off back to Kyle for Song of Solomon for lesson 13. But anyways, I'm glad that you're here. And we'll just go ahead and get started. Let me share the PowerPoint. So today we're going to be talking about being happy and finding happiness in this life. And as we'll discuss, there are a lot of things to be happy about, but there are a lot of things that really make us sad and that really put us down. And you know, that's okay sometimes, but we're going to talk about our responses to those things in many of the readings that we have today. But first, we'll start off with a memory verse. Memory verse is, once again, Ecclesiastes chapter 12, 13 through 14. The end of the matter, all has been heard. Fear God and keep his commandments, for this is the whole duty of man. For God will bring every deed into judgment, whether every secret thing, whether good or evil. And we'll end next week's class talking about these last two verses as we finish up our study of Ecclesiastes. Now, at the beginning of last class, I kind of did like an overview and an introduction to Ecclesiastes as a whole, just looking at the whole book. And I'm not going to do that today, but if you want to look at that again, I encourage you to go to the church's website and just watch the first like 10 minutes or so of that lesson. But I do want to go over our keywords and phrases once again, because we're going to see them pop up again. In fact, in the very first verse of our reading today, we're going to see under the sun. But anyways, the first one is vanity, and if we remember from last week, it literally means breath or vapor. Like, it's here and it's gone. And it's used to talk about the just the emptiness and the futility of life, or maybe a certain activity in life. And it's used many times, at least 33 times in this book. Under the sun is talking about, you know, working on the earth, working under the heat, under the sun. And as I mentioned last week, I think a lot of Genesis chapter 3, when God tells Adam that he will have to provide for himself by working from the sweat of the brow, where he has to tend to the fields. And under the sun is, as I say, opposite of above the sun, where God is. And so a lot of times when the preacher here talks about under the sun, he's looking at life without God rather than life with God. And our last key phrase is striving after the wind. And that's just the idea that we're doing something that's impossible to complete or impossible to finish or just flat out pointless. There's no rhyme or reason why we should even be trying to do this. And so with that, we'll jump into our first reading from Ecclesiastes chapter 4, verses 1 through 3. And 7 through 12. Again, I saw all the oppressions that are done under the sun, and behold, the tears of the oppressed, and they had no one to comfort them. On the side of their oppressors, there was power, and there was no one to comfort them. And I thought the dead who were already dead more fortunate than the living who are still alive. But better than both is he who has not yet been and has not seen the evil deeds that are done under the sun. Again, I saw vanity under the sun. One person who has no other, either son or brother, yet there is no end to all this toil, and his eyes are never satisfied with riches, so that he never asks, "For whom am I toiling and depriving myself of pleasure?" This also is vanity and an unhappy business. Two are better than one, because they have a good reward for their toil. For if they fall, one will lift up his fellow. But woe to him who is alone when he falls and has not another to lift him up. Again, If two lie together, they keep warm. But how can one keep warm alone? And though a man might prevail against one who is alone, two will withstand him. A threefold cord is not quickly broken. If you remember from my overview from the class last week, there are two perspectives in this book. One is the perspective of with God, and the other, the perspective without God. And this is definitely the preacher looking at life without God. Only somebody that does not have God would make some of the comments he makes, especially in verses 2 and 3, about how the dead who are already dead are more fortunate than those who are living. But to go into our questions, number one, why are the dead and the unborn better than the living? That's at least according to this passage. And that's because they do not see the evil deeds that are done under the sun. And they are not experiencing or observing the troubles that come with this life, whether that be hunger, poverty, hatred, violence, death, sickness, or any of those things like that. You hear arguments made by those that are maybe considering abortion for an unexpected child, or maybe unfortunately an unwanted child. And they talk about how, if they abort their child, they won't have to deal with the suffering, or maybe the mother or father, they're not very wealthy and they're quite poor, and this child, they won't have to deal with poverty, they won't have to deal with want or anything. And as is stated in this passage, that is true. They will escape those things, but they also miss out on so much more. These unborn children, at least in this example, they won't experience love. They won't experience compassion. They won't enjoy, simple pleasures like, running outside in the rain, or, a warm hug from a parent, or, even spending time with loved ones, or, something as simple as like playing Little League baseball or walking around on the beach. And when you bring someone into the world, no matter the circumstance, there are going to be struggles. There are going to be problems that they face. But there are so many things worth living for, and especially life is worth living for if you're living for God. And in this instance here at the beginning of chapter 4, the preacher is forgetting that. Or maybe not forgetting it, but at least looking at what life would be like if he forgot to live for God. Anyways, question 2, why is it important to not be alone? And that's because if one falls, the other can lift them up. Two can keep warm. Two have a better chance of winning and, in a struggle or in a fight. And then it concludes our reading by saying that a threefold cord is not easily broken. In Genesis chapter 2, God saw that man was alone in the garden, and everything in his creation up to that point was good, but he said that this was not good. And so he created a partner. He created somebody that was compatible with him and that could help him and be there. God wants us to encourage each other and wants us to encourage each other and to be there for each other physically, spiritually, socially, mentally, emotionally. And I think I have realized that even more so during the things that we are going through right now, just not being able to see people as often and just having a little bit harder time, maybe being in contact with some people. But God intends us to be together. He intends us to be a social people. We'll go on to our next reading, Ecclesiastes chapter 5, verses 10 through 20. He who loves money will not be satisfied with money, nor he who loves wealth with his income. This also is vanity. When goods increase, they increase who eat them. And one had vantage as their owner but to see them with his eyes. Sweet is the sleep of a laborer, whether he eats little or much. But the full stomach of the rich will not let him sleep. There was a grievous evil that I have seen under the sun. Riches were kept by their owner to his hurt, and those riches were lost in a bad venture. And he is a father of a son, but he has nothing in his hand. As he came from his mother's womb, he shall go again, naked as he came, and shall take nothing for his toil that he may carry away in his hand. This also is a grievous evil. Just as he came, so shall he go. And what gain is there to him who toils for the wind? Moreover, all his days he eats in darkness and much vexation and sickness and anger. Behold, what I have seen to be good and fitting is to eat and drink and find enjoyment in all the toil with which one toils under the sun the few days of his life that God has given him. For this is his lot. Everyone also to whom God has given wealth and possessions and power to enjoy them and to accept his lot and rejoice in his toil, this is the gift of God. For he will not much remember the days of his life because God keeps him occupied with joy in his heart. So question one, why does the laborer sleep well and the rich man not sleep well? Well, the laborer is tired. He's tired, but he is satisfied with the work that he has completed that day. My family grew up watching Andy Griffith, and there's an episode there where Opie is trying to convince his dad, he's trying to convince Andy to give him his allowance without doing any work. And Andy explains that, when you work and you complete your chores and everything, there's a, you feel good about it and you have a, good feeling inside. So we asked Opie, don't you feel good when you finish those chores? And Opie says, yeah, good and tired. And then Andy continues to explain that the older you get, the more you'll work and the more that you'll get in return. And he asks Opie if he understands. And Opie says, yeah, the older you get, the tireder you get. And there's actually a lot of wisdom in that. The older you get, the more responsibilities you have, the more tired you are, but also the more satisfied that you can be with the work that you've done. But on the contrast, the rich man is worried. He stays up all night worrying about his possessions because the laborer has nothing to lose, but the rich man does. And it's because the rich man puts his trust in his possessions, in his wealth, and in everything that he owns. And he does not put his trust in the Lord. Question two. Since we leave this earth just as we came, with nothing, what gain is there in working at all? I came up with three reasons why it is good to work, despite the fact that we leave this earth with nothing that we earned. The first reason is so that we can glorify God in our work and in our labor. We've all been in workplaces, working for companies where there were slackers on one hand, and then people that worked really, really hard on the other hand. And the supervisors obviously enjoy having the people that work hard work for them. And this is one way that we can glorify God, because God asks us to be good workers and to not work with eye service. The second reason I had so that we can have something to give to others, whether it be our spouse or our children or friends or the church and God, or even charity organizations, or just anybody that is in need and has want. We should work to give to others. And then the last reason we should work is so that we can just enjoy the simple pleasures of this life you know, enjoying a good meal, enjoying a good night's sleep like the laborer. Question three, according to verse 20, how can we have joy in our heart? We can have joy in our heart, according to that last verse, by accepting the life that God has given us and completely devoting our lives to God. This life and the work that we do is a gift from God. Let's go to our next reading, Ecclesiastes chapter 6. This one's short. It's just the first three verses of that chapter. There is an evil that I have seen under the sun, and it lies heavy on mankind. A man to whom God gives wealth, possessions, and honor, so that he lacks nothing of all that he desires. Yet God does not give him power to enjoy them, but a stranger enjoys them. This is vanity. It is a grievous evil. If a man fathers 100 children and lives many years, so the days of his years are many, but his soul is not satisfied with life's good things, and he has no burial, I say that a stillborn child is better off than he. So our first question, what is the evil seen under the sun in verse 2? That evil is that a man receives wealth and riches from God, only to have them taken away and enjoyed by someone who does not appreciate it. Sometimes things happen in our lives, and we lose our possessions or we lose our money, whether that be, we lose our job, or we have great expenses like a sickness, or other debts that we have to pay. And it's not fair. It's not fair because, we work hard for these things, and then sometimes it doesn't work out. But I think there's one lesson that I learned when I was younger that I've tried to keep in mind. When I was growing up, in my bedroom, I actually had the biggest closet out of all of us in our house. It just happened to be that way. And my parents stored a bunch of stuff in there because it was the largest closet. And so probably only about, 90%, about 90% of what was in my bedroom closet was my parents. And only probably about 10 to 20% was actually my stuff. And I mentioned it to Dad one time that, y'all keep all your things in my closet. And he reminded me that, he was the one that was paying the mortgage for the house. And this house was not mine, but it was his. And I think we need to think that way when it comes to our possessions, that they really aren't our possessions. They are the things that God has blessed us with. And because he's blessed us with them, we need to use them for his service and to always be thankful for what we have, because it can be taken away at any moment. Question two, why is a stillborn child better off than a rich man, according to verse three? He does not appreciate the things that he has received and enjoyed as God's gift. The rich man doesn't appreciate what he has. And his riches are God's gift. But not only are the riches God's gift, but the ability to enjoy those gifts the ability to enjoy those gifts is also a gift from God. Long life and having lots of children were signs of high status back in the ancient culture. And today we would think of maybe someone has a good career or they have really good, deep financial investments. So that's kind of a sign of a high status. But whatever it is, we need to be thankful for what God has given us, because it is a gift from God, and we need to enjoy what he has given us. Our next reading is in Ecclesiastes chapter 7. We'll be reading verses 1 through 4 and then 4 other verses throughout the chapter. A good name is better than precious ointment, and the day of death than the day of birth. It is better to go to the house of mourning than to go to the house of feasting. For this is the end of all mankind, and the living will lay it to heart. Sorrow is better than laughter, for by sadness of face the heart is made glad. The heart of the wise is in the house of mourning, but the heart of fools is in the house of mirth. Be not quick in your spirit to become angry, for anger lodges in the heart of fools. Say not, why were the former days better than these? For it is not from wisdom that you ask this. Wisdom gives strength to the wise man more than 10 rulers who are in a city. See, this alone I found, that God made man upright, but they have sought out many schemes. Originally, this reading did not include verse 10. But I added it just because in the last couple months, as I've been reading through the book of Ecclesiastes, preparing to teach these classes, Ecclesiastes 7:10 stuck out to me more than any other verse. And I think it's because of what we're all kind of going through right now. I can't tell you how many times me or a friend or just someone I've been with has said something along the lines of how things, you know, they talk about how things were like pre-corona or like before all of this happened or before the pandemic. And the preacher here says in verse 10 that it is not wise that we say this. It's not wise to talk about how, you know, the older days were better. And it's because the past had struggles too. There was sickness, there was violence, there was stress, there was work, there were bills to pay, there were, you know, a whole host of problems. And when we say this here in verse 10, we forget about all those things. But the present, what we're going through right now during this coronavirus, there are so many things that we should take joy in. There are so many things that we should be thankful for. You know, all of us being like in our houses, we've had the opportunity to spend more time with our family. I live with 3 roommates, and for a while there, we made a concerted effort to fix dinner together and to eat dinner together. And we got to spend more time together than we had in months, maybe ever. And so spending time with those that we live with has been a huge blessing. I've learned especially to appreciate those at university more that I haven't seen as often or I haven't seen at all since March. And I've tried to do a good job of reaching out to them, but I've definitely grown in appreciation for them. Another great thing about this that we're going through is that many of us have learned new skills or maybe picked up new hobbies or found things to do with their, their free time. And one thing I hope that we all have done, and one thing that I definitely have done, is that when this started in March, I definitely started studying my Bible more. I had more time during the day, and I just kind of created a schedule for myself, and and it's been great. It has been absolutely fantastic, and I hope that we've use the time during these past few months to grow closer to God, spend more time in our Bibles, spend more time in prayer, and just become more and more like our Heavenly Father. But as there are struggles going on right now, but there are so many things to be thankful for. And there were struggles in past days, but there were so many things to enjoy in the past days. We already read this verse, but Ecclesiastes 1 verse 9 says, what has been is what will be, and what has been done is what will be done. And there is nothing new under the sun. The things we're going through right now, they're things that we've all gone through before. And they're coming in very different ways right now, but you know, every time, every age, every era has the same troubles, even though they might look different. Dwelling on the good old days is vanity, because we can't go back to them. We only live now. And they weren't necessarily the good old days. They also had troubles. Anyways, we'll go on to our questions. Question one, why is a good name better than precious ointment? I think, and this is a pretty easy question. A person's inward self and even their reputation and their character is better than whatever outward appearance or fame or fortune that they might have. I think we can all agree that that's true. Question two, why is sorrow better than laughter and the house of mourning better than the house of mirth or feasting? It's because we grow wiser during these times of struggle, these times of hardship or sadness. There isn't a whole lot that we can learn during times of happiness. We can learn things, but we learn a lot more when we are going through struggles. When I read the House of Mourning, I typically think of a funeral home. And I think that's what a lot of us think of, but I think it can apply to, you know, any kind of sad occasion or, you know, struggle that we're going through. But I know at funerals and things, I do a lot of reflection, just my own life and how I'm living as maybe compared to the person that is being honored that day. Question three, what can we learn about man's creation from verse 29? The thing that I take from that verse is that God created us good. It was not good that we were alone, as we talked about earlier, but God created us good. But it was our choice. It was our own desires that caused us to stray from that path, from that good path. And we tried to seek pleasure in other things rather than in God. And so God created us good. We'll go to our last reading for today. Ecclesiastes chapter 8, verses 12 through 17. Though a sinner does evil 100 times and prolongs his life, yet I know that it will be well with those who fear God, because they fear before him. But it will not be well with the wicked. Neither will he prolong his days like a shadow, because he does not fear before God. There is vanity that takes place on earth, that there are righteous people to whom it happens according to the deeds of the wicked, and there are wicked people to whom it happens according to the deeds of the righteous. I said that this also is vanity, and I commend joy. For man has nothing better under the sun but to eat and drink and be joyful. For this will go with him in his toil through the days of his life that God has given him under the sun. When I applied my heart to know wisdom and to see the business that is done on earth, how neither day nor night do one's eyes see sleep, then I saw all the work of God, that man cannot find out the work that is done under the sun. However much man may toil in seeking, he will not find it. Even though a wise man claims to know it, he cannot find it out. Question one, how does the preacher know that it will be well with those who fear God? And this is a little bit circular, but you know, he knows that it will be well with those who fear God because they fear God. And obviously, you know, what does that mean? That means living a life completely devoted to him, as we talked about earlier, and having this deep, profound respect and admiration and love for our Heavenly Father. If we trust in him, God will take care of us. And in this life, things will not always be fair. You know, this verse talks about how righteous things happen to the wicked and wicked things happen to the righteous. But God will even things out in the end. God will give justice and he will take care of us. A last question for today. Can we know the work of God? And the answer to that is simply no, we can't. The work of God is so deep and profound that not even the wisest man, it says, could understand the ways of God. And if this book was written by Solomon, if Solomon is the preacher, then he was the wisest man to ever live. And so if he could know, then we definitely could not. But also, God has not revealed it to us. He has revealed some of his work to us, but he has not revealed all of his work to us. So just some concluding thoughts to just kind of wrap up what we've talked about today. Happiness is found in the company of others. The title for today's lesson was Being Happy, and we've touched on that a good bit. But from our first reading, we talked about how we should be there for each other and we should encourage one another, and God intended for us to be together. And that is where happiness can be found. Happiness can also be found in good work and being satisfied with working hard and working hard for the Lord. It is good to be sad because then we can learn and become wiser. It is during those times that we are sad or downtrodden that we learn sometimes the most about us and the most about God. Then finally, happiness is ultimately found in trusting and fearing God. And that's exactly what we talked about there in chapter 8. Thank you so much for listening today. I hope you took something from chapters 4 through 8 of Ecclesiastes. I'm looking forward to next Sunday when we can look at Ecclesiastes chapters 9 through 12 and wrap this book up. So thank you very much. I appreciate your attention today.